Welcome in, kingly brothers and heroic husbands from around the planet. Welcome to this new episode of the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast. In this episode, we welcome in the brilliant Thomas Fanner. Thomas is a combat athlete, coach, father, and husband. As the founder of the movement, Dads Who Lead, he's on a mission to break the mainstream culture of father by guiding dads to become trusted and revered leaders within their home. When he became a father at the age of 18, he jumped headfirst into the adventure, challenge, and growth of being a leader. Thomas spent 7 years as a teacher where he saw a gap between what kids received and the skills they needed to be successful. He believes it's our role as fathers to prepare our children for independence. Thomas Fanner, brother, it's an honor and a privilege to have you on the show, man. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Thanks for the warm introduction.
Thomas, jumping straight in, like it's sort of like I relate to it myself as jumping into marriage. You know, I felt marriage for me is like it was a whirlwind romance, and 6 months later we did it our style, myself and my queen Matilda, overlooking the Atlantic Ocean. We got married our style, and I was like within 6 months. And when I look back, I'm like, it's like that just happened to me. I don't know how much of a conscious lead I was in any of that experience. It's like the whirlwind took me, and you know, that brought me many years later into, you know, Be the Husband She Brags About, etc., etc. The dominoes all make sense looking back. And I imagine I can relate that you and your in the tapestry of your life as a man, you had an even earlier baptism of fire into fatherhood, which amazingly, you know, years later, you've carved out the character to lead men and teach men around the world in that. But can you take us back to that part of your bios, like you're age 18 and you become a dad? I'm not literally talking about the biological, how it comes about. I'm really fucking hoping guys listening in know how it biologically happens. but take us into that story, man. You're early in adulthood, if you want to say you're on that cusp of boyhood, teenage, into, you know, coming into adulthood, and then bang, the news comes true. Your girlfriend is pregnant. Take us into that part of the tapestry of your life.
Yeah. I remember my first instinct was like, wow, I knew I wanted to be a dad. And I didn't think it was going to be then. I didn't think it was going to be the way it was. But I immediately felt that love for my unborn child. I mean, the tiniest seed inside, you know, his mom. But I knew that was the moment I became a father, not when he was born. And while I remember preparing it, because I was still in high school when I found out, and it was actually just the very beginning of my first few weeks of community college when he was born. But I recall watching my classmates play Frisbee and thinking, wow. I watching them just having fun and being kids, and like, wow, is this over for me? Is it over being a kid? Is this the end of a chapter that it is closing faster than I expected? And is this going to be like that feeling of loss of freedom? And it turned out not to be that way at all. And there was more responsibility for me, but like the ability to tap into my inner child had nothing to do with, it turns out, had absolutely nothing to do with whether I was a dad or not. If anything, gives me more opportunity to tap into my inner child.
And was there any kickback in your system at all? Or was it all like, I'm actually loving, I have to say, I'm going to just lead with full vulnerable openness here. There's like a surprise within me. I'm like, oh, wow. What was it like that? Because there's an assumption in me when, if I put myself to then 18 at that age, it's like, man, I don't know what the fuck. I think I honestly think, well, there was a part of me when like myself and my queen, to let you in on the story, and we're going to just cup of coffee style, two dudes having a real deep conversation. When I met my queen, it's like we were 23 and I don't know, it's like 24 and a half or what, like exact time, but it's like very short time later, we moved to Italy and we had, my queen was pregnant with our first kid. I sort of had, maybe I'm not, I'm going back into my own past here as I'm speaking with you. I probably, like, I do have an air where if I speak about that time, I was pretty cool and calm with it externally. But when I look back, Thomas, and maybe this is like my curiosity is spontaneously in sharing this with you, like really digging back how I was feeling at that time. When I look back retrospectively, I do know that deep down, there was a part of me shitting myself. There was a part of me really fucking fearful. There was a part of me going, yeah, I'm saying a lot of shit to the outside world. And yeah, I'm like the first up to just change the nappy, do the feed. I don't mind. I'll push the buggy. I'll do that shit. And like, I'm fine on the outside. But deep down, there's like a deep inadequacy in me where I was like, I have no fucking idea. I'm in out of my depth. My curiosity and like, excuse me, if it was not there, okay. I could be just projecting like where I was not at. What was there any of that when you look back retrospectively, was there any of that part of you or were you actually just in the fucking zone? And I'm just like, I'm that was my personal experience.
I love that question. It brings me back to a concept called range. And range is our ability to both create and destroy as men. And there are men who have very small range in that they're not really able to destroy or create, or they just have one side and not the other. And I believe as dads who lead, we've got to have range to be able to be on both sides. And I do believe that age, as like, you know, age is a number, but what are my skill sets? And do I have the skill sets to make this happen? And if there's somebody that was, I felt like if there's somebody that was going to make this work, it was going to be me. And not from a space of arrogance, but I had nieces and nephews growing up in high school. Like my, I became an uncle at the age of 7. So I've got older siblings, 15 and 9 years. So my sister Robin had already had a few kids and I had done some babysitting, and that kind of equipped me with some basic how to manage a baby. I already knew, the essentials of how to hold the baby, it wasn't all brand new. What do I do? I wasn't in that space. So I would encourage, it's not really something that I really reflected on before, but I think that preparation, even if it was very mild, being around young kids, was really powerful because it gave me confidence going into fatherhood with just the basic caretaking. And I think there's obviously a lot more than the caretaking, but I hear about dads who they're holding their kids for the first time, and it's the first time, or maybe one of the first times they're holding a baby, and it makes them nervous. Like anytime you do that for the first time, with anything, it makes you a little nervous. So having that skill to be able to do some basics, and even later on, you know, fast forward 10 years, when my daughter Maddie was born, I had more experience than my wife with taking care of small babies. And quickly she picked things up innately as a mother, but it put me in a position of competency. And that was, just having that basic, some basic skills in that area helped a lot.
Yeah, I'm hearing you in that. And it was actually like, I'll hold my hand up. I think there was a curiosity, but there was an unspoken judgment when it was like, hold on, man, were you that like grounded going into that? And clearly you were, because I when you reflect upon that, you know, about having, you know, nieces, nephews and all that experience, it makes sense to me. I fucking none of that experience, literally. Like, yeah. And again, here spontaneously, just like we're rolling in the dojo of deep, intimate, masculine conversation. It's beautiful. I'm unpacking part of my past going, I'm questioning, had I ever fucking held a child like a baby? I don't think I had. Had I ever babysat? No. And never. It's like, you know, my younger sister, well, there was always two older brothers. So like, I never had a responsibility. And like, she was just 2 years younger than me. So, hey, you know, if I was out of babysitting, she was out of babysitting within reason. So I had zero of that experience. So it makes a lot of sense that there was some part of your nervous system going, you know, you've went over that bridge tons of times with other little human beings. And, you know, sort of on some level, what's the difference here? Yet take us into the story. You came in with that experiential know-how on one level, you know, in that rudimentary, like you were on a level comfortable, but it wasn't the easiest baptism of fire in on a practical sense because of the relationship dynamics. Can you just bring guys into the story behind that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I to be direct, like my son's mom and I are very different people. We're dating in high school. Our relationship did not last. We broke up while Charles' mom was pregnant with him. And so we weren't together when he was born. And there was the intention for me to be there, maybe not there in the room, but like, hey, Charles was born, you know, or the baby was born, come see him. I didn't know what gender he was until after he was born. But I actually wasn't able to, I ended up having to seek legal counsel to pursue, to be able just to see him and start to build a relationship with him. It was 2.5 weeks after he was born before I held him for the first time. So it was not this joyous, exciting time. It was scary and then met with doubt. Like, I had no doubt in my ability. And I think maybe his mom's family had some doubt in their mind about my ability to perform as a dad, but I had no doubt in my mind and I wasn't going to be turned away.
I just fucking love that. I'm like, it's like the masculine growl was there. You know, they just, I'm just picturing you in that on one level, tender, young, you know, boy coming of age into man and definitely like this rip-roaring ride into, okay, I got to fucking stand up. And yet you can speak to, there was this growl inside of you that's like, it doesn't fucking matter who's believing me or not, that was there. That was there and live in you. Okay. What my curiosity is, Tom, is like, where did that come from? Like, did that come from your childhood? Did that come from you witnessing your dad? Or where was that birthed? Nature, nurture? I'm really curious. Yeah, where that core came from, if you know.
Yeah, it's a great question. There's a couple things. I'm going to talk to the nurture side and the nature side. My mom and dad both had tumultuous previous marriages, and they came together. So we have a yours, mine, and ours family. So I have as I mentioned, my siblings, I have three sisters and a brother still with us, and they're all like at least 9 years older than me. But there was pain in our past, in our family lineage, of losing children. And my mom lost her daughter, Anna, when she was 6 weeks old. I don't remember exactly the infection that she had, but it ended up taking her life at a young age. And so that there was that loss. And then my dad had an adopted son named David, who drowned in a canoe accident when he was 18. And so this all happened before I was born. Like within, let's see, maybe 5 years before I was born, these two children died. And even though I didn't know them, I knew the pain that it caused my family. And the honor and privilege to bring someone into our family line was not to be taken lightly. And I didn't want that feeling for myself, and I didn't want that feeling for my family that another family member was, you know, be kicked out of our lives. And then as far as the nurture side, I spent that summer before Charles was born grinding, working landscaping, getting eaten by mosquitoes in 90 degree weather, making $8.50 an hour so that I would have some funds to be able to provide and care for him. And I wasn't about to have like gone through all that to just like walk away.
I'm deeply moved by the connection with your mom and dad. I can't imagine. I'm not speaking with them directly. I just can't imagine that pain, you know, as a parent. Fuck, like it doesn't matter what age, like 6 weeks old, 18 years old. And when you say that you knew the pain that was in your family lineage, like how omnipresent was that in the background for you growing up? You know, the relevance and the mentioning of these two beautiful members of your family that were lost, both your mother's side and your dad's side. How was that communicated, and how did that impact you as a boy growing up?
Great question. I just recall my dad. I remember his face anytime he would talk about David, because I know how much he loved and put into him. And I don't know if he felt responsible. I don't know if he felt that he wanted to make sure to keep me safe from any harm like this. But it hurt me too, because it was like, hey, this would have been, you know, we would celebrate his birthday. Oh, he would have been 25 today, or he would have been 31, whatever it is. And he wasn't forgotten. And I heard stories about that he had polio. He was born in Thailand. And that he was like extremely strong with his upper body, and was able to do the Iron Cross on the rings and all this. And so just the stories, and to hear the like the liveliness of it, almost brought his character back to life. And then with Anna, obviously she was really young, but my mom took it as a personal mission. So she had been smoking cigarettes during pregnancy, and she believes, I don't know if the doctor said it directly, but she believes that the cigarette smoking influenced the maldevelopment of Anna and contributed towards her death. And my mother has since spent her life as a respiratory therapist helping people quit smoking. And so it obviously fueled something within her that she needed to resolve to get back to the world. So their presence was always felt, even at not the conscious level saying their name, but at the subconscious level.
It's just so beautiful to hear the tapestry of that life story, because, you know, I come into this conversation, I'm sorry, I'm going to be talking with Thomas about his, you know, the assumption is going to be like your firsthand experience. And yet, you know, myself and every man listening in, it's like vicariously, like hearing, you know, your mom and dad's their experience, it's just that load that we take on as parents. You know, like once, you know, once that beautiful child is conceived, you know, there's no going back. That's just indelibly going to be like notched into your life story. And just that, you know, your mom with that experience and the preciousness of it, that, you know, just to carve out the beauty of like actually supporting other people, and your dad, you know, celebrating and always, you know, reminding everybody of the existence of David, and just that sacred nature, just like deeply, deeply moving. And it makes such sense, actually, you know, that question of mine, the curiosity was, fuck, you know, Thomas, how at the age of like 18 or 19, how did you just have this unfuckwittable will and drive, like with the landscaping, I'm fucking preparing for this, I'm going to provide. It really gives that intentionality that was there, and that core and that fire. Thomas, so, you know, Charles was born, you sought legal aid, and you got that first beautiful, sacred, bittersweet meetup that was happening. That was like, yeah, maybe not the joyful, you know, beautiful, ideal setup, but it happened anyway.
Yeah.
How did things pan out from there? You know, like what way did the story of you being able to show up, was there always resistance there, or did you gain some clarity? Take us into the story of that, please.
Yeah, as a resistance, 100%. I believe that, you know, my priority is preparing Charles for the next season of life. Yeah, he's 16 now. So preparing him, he doesn't want to go to college. He wants to start working, living on his own right after high school. So, you know, I'm talking to him about like, hey, if you're wanting to work right after high school, there's skills that you got to develop that you're going to have to develop faster than your peers who are going to college, because they're going to have 4 extra years to kind of work on some of this. And you asked about resistance. And I do feel resistance from the other side, and I've continued to felt resistance from his mom's side off and on throughout his upbringing. And now, it may be difficult as he's growing for her to, you know, this old relationship that she had with me, she's now seeing Charles becoming maybe more like me as he's competing in martial arts and wrestling and things. But there is no doubt in my mind that there's a subconscious, and it may be because of her family, it may be because of a society, a desire to limit my influence in Charles's life. And I've had to fight to have him. I have him half time, and I actually moved to the town that she moved to so I could do that. But it can be an exhausting battle to turn around, and I see another battle. Like the war continues. It's another battle of making sure I can maintain that connection and relationship with Charles. And I want nothing more than Charles to have a great connection with both of his parents. But as from the jump, I'm not going to be turned away because of resistance.
Mm-hmm. Just to share, it's like what's coming up for me, you know, speaking with so many guys, you know, working with husbands around the world, clearly, you know, the vast majority have they're somewhere along the line of the parenting journey. It's a fucking exceptionally challenging experience as a man to be a dad in the modern world. When you've got the kids under your roof, when you're like you're there, your wife is like they're born in that relationship under the you know energetic, psychological, spiritual roof of your marriage together, it's an exquisitely challenging experience to meet that when you've got those conditions. Yet I'm just what I'm hearing here is like my fullest empathy is like, wow, you know, to have what I'm feeling is like this bind of like having so much intentionality as a dad, and yet there's this continual bind, like even hearing like you speak today, it's like it's still there. It's like this omnipresent in the background, this resistance. How have you managed that, dealing with that resistance that has been omnipresent? You know, you can speculate, is it coming direct from, you know, from Charles' mom or her family or society? It doesn't fucking matter. It's like it was there. You were experiencing this resistance. How did you maintain like your calm, your focus, your concentration that, you know, this is about Charles, this is about being a great dad? Like, were there any, did you maintain your calm, or were there some times when you're like, this is just fucking too much, and like you just blew the lid? Or I'm just curious how you dealt with that, like that sort of omnipresent resistance in the background.
Yeah. So there was a time going into our last court battle. So we've set up 3 parenting plans. The first one we did without court. I won. The second one, we went to court when he was in grade school, and there's a third one right before he started high school. And my family was like, hey, you've done what you can, you know, he's going to be on his own. Not all my family, but certain members, you know, you've done what you can for Charles. There was a time. So let me back up. He was living with me in his 8th grade year. And I lived in Eugene, Oregon, and his mom lived in Redmond, Oregon, which is about 3 hours away. And after he lived with me for about 9 months, he got tired of my leadership. He got burnt out on the expectations that I had for him. Mm. And I take ownership for that. And he moved in with his mom. And even recently he was saying like, oh, I went from your house that was super strict to my mom's house that was like, do what you want, basically. Oh, mom, I don't feel like going to school. Okay, I'll call in. And he's like, they both, that sucked too, he said, you know. So when he moved away from me, there was a while that he didn't want to talk. He didn't want to have conversations. And during that time, my family was basically like, why leave your job? Why leave your house that you have? That's affordable to go live somewhere more expensive where you don't have a job, where you don't have security, you don't have support. My parents live in Eugene. So if we needed to have help watching the kids or go on a date night or whatever, we had that support in town to help us, kind of expanding our family tribe to move somewhere where we didn't have any of that.
So just to get up to speed, because I know I reached out to you after listening on the Dad Edge, and for guys listening in, I believe your wife now is Megan. So
yes,
I'm just trying to get and also get my own mind sharpened as to chronologically what's happening here. When are you talking about? If I remember, was this like 2022? This is like just a few years ago.
Yeah, it was the winter of 2022, beginning of 2022 that this was happening, that he moved out, and then. In that following August, we had the court hearing, and as my legal team and I were able to prove, this is how Charles was doing when he was with me. He was attending school, he was passing his classes, he was working a job, and he was participating in sports. Now, what's been happening since he was with mom? This is like to be straight up with your audience. What was happening with his mom? Well, he was failing his classes. He was not participating in any sports or working, or his attendance rate was down. So I had this really stark comparison that essentially put me in a position where I could get, if I was willing to move to Central Oregon, I could get all the conditions that I wanted out of the parenting plan, including half time, no child support, and some other stipulations that would prevent her from moving. Because there was a time we were all living in Eugene and she decided to move, which disrupted everything.
So if I understand correctly, and it's been, you had an initial win there, because clearly when Charles' mom decided to move, Charles obviously made this decision to go, no, screw that, I'm staying with dad.
Yes.
So there was this 9-month period where I'm with dad, this is cool, things are going good, he's participating in sport, his grades, he has his job, there's structure. But like 9 months into that experience, Charles just lands this bomb on you and goes, fuck that, I'm going to mom. I'm really trying to like get my nervous system in, like to empathize. I can't imagine, you know, like you've had that victory, because in the face of all that resistance since his birth, other side, his mom, family, et cetera, you've won. Like you've got your son going, fuck yeah, dad, I'm going to do. And it's working.
Yep.
It's working, you know, and I know it's like ultimately there was a lot of learning, and I'm curious to know what the learning has been since then, but it was, mm-hmm. it was working in a lot of ways. And then he dumps this on you. I don't mean dumps it on you, that was like disrespectfully done, but it's like, boom, done. Then the court comes, but like you mentioned that, you know, Charles at that point was just not wanting to speak with you. He wasn't wanting communication. Like, what was your mind? What was going through your mind? What was going through your heart? Like, where were the emotions that you were going through, going, fuck, you know, you've done your best. Like, you're doing your absolute best. You've had this victory. 9 months, he's with you. Things are going good. And then this gets, you get a slap in the face. I'm just curious, like, what the fuck is going through your mind at that point?
Initially, is anger, like, hey, look at everything that I've done to sacrifice to make this possible. And I was upset, obviously. And there's obviously his legal expenses, because we had, you know, part of the reason that I started to face more resistance from Charles' mom was she would call the school and cause, basically, if Charles got in trouble, she would call and give him a hard time at school. She would threatening to say, oh, well, I'm going to try to get you into military school, you know, just things that were like, hey, you know, Charles is in Eugene living with me, you're living in another town, this isn't working, we need to change our custody plan. So I had formalized that, and Charles was like, yeah, I don't want to move to Redmond, I want to stay here in Eugene. And then while that, once I had done that, that's when things started to shift, and Charles got fed up with the structure and order at dad's house, and he wanted the freedom at mom's house. So during that period in the spring of 2022, when he was living out there, I had to really reflect, and going into the summer, and when our relationship was on ice, let's say, I had to reflect, not from the space of, Charles, I need to make you do something, you should be more grateful, look at all that I've done. But I had to say, okay, what are the gaps in my leadership? Where did I go wrong? Where could I have done differently? And how can I recover and repair things so that I'm better for the next time? And through that process and getting some coaching myself, I was able to identify and develop a leadership based parenting style that develops independence within my son, as opposed to, this is what you need to do. And that works really well for him. And it's worked well for our relationship growing together. It's worked well for him finding a path that's intentional and one that he's enjoying. And it puts him as the main character in his own story.
Man, I'm just fucking loving this. The main character in his own story. I don't know if you come across a story brand as a marketing or business approach.
Yeah, yes, I'm familiar with it.
Cool. It was like it's just, well, it's the hero story, and that whole marketing, it's like Be the Husband She Brags About, like it's all based on that. I just love that whole idea, like to allow, you know, when I'm people listening in, guys listening in, it's like to always like come from that perspective. You're the hero in your own story. You know, I always refer to, you know, everything we do and say is to support you becoming the marriage transforming hero of your relationship. It's all about the guys. But I just love that you bring that into parenting. There's a term that I've heard you use with Larry, and looking at your website, and I'm curious to know what the distinction is, and I feel you're leading to it, but it's stop parenting, start leading. What are the core characteristics of what you mean? Like what are the descriptors of parenting, and what are the descriptors of leading? Like, I just really want guys, you know, that rational minded superpower that we've all sharpened up predominantly, to get this sort of black and white, what you're meaning in the distinction between parenting and leading.
Yeah, that's a great question. So parenting, and as you mentioned at the beginning, I was a teacher for a while. Parenting is about, hey, these are the directions I need you to follow. This is the result that I want. What is it that I need kids to do? Or what is it that I need my kids to perform to get through the day? It's very focused on the kids. And I see this with families who, like, man, my kid needs to get counseling. My kids, in some cases, need to go to a boarding school. I need to change the child to get them to where they need to be. And the parent's focus when we're parenting is on the child. What's much harder to do is to focus on ourselves and focus on the actions that we're taking to grow who we are as men. And when we do that, it positions us in a space of authority that when we do need to say something, it's coming from a much greater space. You know, like Mark now is a lot different than even 10 years ago as a dad, because of who we're competing against. We're competing against YouTube and Instagram influencers for our kids' attention. We're competing against so much more technology to capture their attention and have them listen to us. And the way that our parents had us listen, not universally, but I'm generalizing, on average, like what is in my family is like, hey, this is what I need you to do. You need to do it. It doesn't work anymore. We've got to be more connected with who our kids are and where they're going. And so leading versus parenting really comes down to where your focus is. Is your focus on yourself to put yourself in a position to lead your kids to a positive space, a positive lifestyle, positive communication style? Or is your focus on changing the kid?
This is so epically important. I've heard so many, it's like a societal wide avoidance of taking extreme ownership. I love the term extreme ownership from Jocko Willink. A lot of guys, have you read Jocko's book,
Extreme Ownership?
Fuck, man. Go on.
That's ownership is like the foundation of everything that we do with Dads Who Lead. So we have the Dads Who Lead pyramid. It's the base, man. You, until you're willing to take ownership, nothing else is going to fall in place where it should.
Man, I just fucking intuitively knew you'd be an extreme ownership dude. When I heard you on the Dad Edge, I was like, man, I sent you the email straight away, checked your website and just everything. But it's like it's really true, everything you're saying and here as well. And I love guys listening to that. It's that key story that's in that book. And I have spoken in the podcast, but I think it's like so long ago. It's just one to remind ourselves of. But exactly what you're saying there, Thomas, is that story in the book of, I forget, is it like Boat Team 2 and Boat Team 6? I mix up the teams, but it was in Navy Hell Week where there's these Navy SEAL, well, they're students, I suppose, they're training to become Navy SEALs. But there's the leaders of these boats and they're going through the grueling Hell Week and it's like there's competition based. And if you win, like you get to have a break. It's like it's as competitive as a human being's nervous system and physiology can be tested through. And there's, I forget which is which, but we'll go with, I think it's Boat Team 6. They're constantly losing. That leader is fucking his team members out of it. They're not winning. They're not paddling through the waters enough. And Boat Team 2 is, with smaller guys, winning constantly. And the commander that's over the whole training just goes, okay, we're going to swap leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And in the swap of leaders, so the same team of guys that have been losing constantly with a new leader, all of a sudden are whipping ass.
Yes.
And the same team of guys who were winning, now with a poor leader, they start losing. And it's just the leaders. And I love, and I'm hearing it in years, but it's like coming, it's just, there's no thing, there's no, what's the Jocko phrase? There's no thing, there's no such thing as bad teams, only bad leaders.
Bad leaders. Bad leadership. Yep.
I like just coming through the guys, I just wanted to bring that story in because, you know, you're coming from an extreme ownership perspective.
Yes.
To take us deeper into the intentionality of what extreme ownership looks for men looking in, that let's say, you know, I know myself at certain times for sure. Fuck. It's like I was doing, like, I think every man listens in with good intentions. I want to bring that context in before we bring full on fire. I'm going to ask like Thomas to just bring full masculine, direct challenge, no bullshit, like calling it as it is.
Yes.
But I would build a little bit of context for every man listening in. Guys, both Thomas, myself, get like, no matter where you're at now, we're not questioning. Your intentions are not in question. I personally was fucking up parenting, but my intentions were 10 out of 10. So I want to build that in so that every guy is safe, you're feeling seen, you're heard, you're honored with where you're at, you're safe. But then from that platform, like Thomas, tell us as you're seeing it and you're helping hundreds of men around the world to shift from the parenting old time authoritative, you know, do it because I'm louder than you or I'm taller than you type mentality that a lot of us grew up with, into taking extreme ownership. Bring us full fire, man. What do guys really need to take on board?
Yeah. Since you brought up Jocko, it's something I think about. No bad teams, only bad leadership. That means if your connection with your wife isn't where you want it to be, it's on you. You're the leader of the home. You've got to make a change. If your connection with your kid isn't where you want to be, it's definitely on you. You've raised the kid from the jump. They're coming from who you are. So you're going to understand them better than anybody. That's on you. What are the adjustments that you need to make to get to the space, to get to the relationship, to get to the connection, connect to the drive and direction that you want for your kids, even if they're teenagers? There's something that's unique that you have that nobody else does. And that's the opportunity to listen to their story and to understand it's not about where you want them to go, but it's them knowing where they want to go and the conviction that they have to drive towards it. And they're either going to drive with you, this is kids' nature, or they're going to drive in the opposite direction. So the impact of our leadership is absolutely tremendous on not just how our kids perform from the ages of 11 to 19, but that is laying the foundation for the direction that they're going to take the rest of their life. Sometimes I think about if things aren't going well in my house, Mark's talking about Jocko, like, and if Jocko came in and had my role as the leader of this household, how different would things be? Because I'm still like, right now, our garage is a mess. Our kitchen sink is full. We've got things and fires that we're putting out with, you know, a 1-year-old and a 4-year-old and a 16-year-old and two parents working. Man, our house isn't perfect. There's things we got to get better at. But I'm not going to sulk and, oh man, this is so terrible. It's like, all right, I've made this mess that I created. Now, a little mess is a little mess. We have strong communication. That's a strength. We have strong fitness levels. That's a strength. We prioritize that. Like, that's part of the reason our kitchen sink is messy. We're like, all right, well, Dad needs to work out. Maddie has soccer practice. Charles has Muay Thai. Dad needs to train. So sometimes those things get pushed to the side. But regardless of the result, I've got to take responsibility for what it is and identify how I can put people in position to create the best household that I can, an environment that I can for all of my family members to write the story that they want to write for their lives.
I'm loving the fire here, Thomas. Thomas, you said something just off recording before coming in. I was asking Thomas, just, you know, was there any core part you wanted to speak to? And the one thing you mentioned, it was like, you want to speak to your observation and perception that you feel men have been trained and groomed to be the follower in a relationship.
Yeah.
The follower at home, in your own house, in your own kingdom. And you see this as a problem. Take me deeper into your observations there. I'm really curious.
Yeah. So society trains us for 18 years when we're in school to come in, sit down, follow directions, turn in assignments, stand in line. And girls progress faster than boys, especially I'm thinking back to my time in middle school. They're taller. They're more mature. They get better grades. They get in less trouble. They're often the superstars. They kind of get conditioned for a little while as the superstars. And then in high school, it kind of shifts. You know, the boys fill in, they get taller, they fill in puberty. But we're conditioned through sitcoms and media, TV, and the internet. And even joke, you know, you'll hear jokes about, he's just the bumbling idiot dad who works hard, but when it comes to having to lay out a budget or discipline his kids or manage a household, he doesn't know which way is up. He's just able to do what he's told to do. He's just a workhorse. And that mindset of, oh, I'm just here along for the ride, is so dangerous. Because it's unattractive to our wives, even though it's greeted in our society with celebration and comic relief. And isn't the woman the superhero? And look at all the amazing things she does. And I wish that he would just be lost without his wife. We've got to rewrite the story. We've got to be the man for our wives who can take the lead, that does know where he's going, that does understand how to create a household culture and environment that's balanced. When I walk into your house, I should be able to tell from the time I open the door that this is a space where men and women are sharing. And I see this where, you know, you walk into a house and if it feels like, you know, decorated with pillows and everything's very feminized within the home, and there's no sign of masculinity, that shows that the woman's making all the decisions and, oh, whatever works for me, that's fine. And it might be in the short term what she says she wants, but women are craving a man that can say no and they can make a decision and they can lead them into an adventure that's greater than themselves.
Man, I'm loving it. It's very validating to actually hear you say this. It's been an observation of mine for time. I love you just seeing the media, modern media, and like modern, it's like going back decades at this point, but it's like the Homer Simpsons of the world,
yep.
Over the hill. What the fuck? There's all these, I've stopped looking as a result of all of your observations. We've stopped looking at TV, like mainstream TV, like it's about a decade ago. And we're really selective with what we put our eyes in front of. But I get all of that. You know, one example for me personally of what you're talking about, you know, just not feeling like I was a leader. I remember at one point, Thomas, like there, and it's in recent years, I'd done a few years of men's work, you know, just to give you a little bit of a background so you can relate with me. Guys listening in will notice, it's about like four and a half years ago, I had like a total fucking marriage breakdown breakthrough experience. Obviously came around the corner doing amazing since, but I mean, it's phased out. It's like a lot done, a ton more to do. It's the road to mastery. I'll never arrive. But it was just about a year and a half ago, I think. I remember one day in the kitchen, and I'll sort of asterisk this because we've gotten fucking trigger happy judgmental kickback from people, which is like, oh, you know, Matilda, my queen, she loves cooking. So it's like, it's one of her strengths. I'm good at cooking, but she actually really likes that. She loves that space, baking. She, like, we unschool our girls. The girls are fucking maestros. They're incredible in baking, kitchen. So predominantly they take that space. That's a conscious choice. I do other stuff around the house, blah, blah, blah. Like we find our groove. But there was one day, it's like, I came into the kitchen, and in that day, I was doing the cooking, or I was doing my thing within the space. And it's like, I forget exactly what Matilda said, but it was sort of like this throwaway comment, like, get out of my space. And I remember in that moment, and I look back now going, yeah, well, you know, there was a buildup. There was a lot of unspoken shit. And yeah. I had unwittingly taken on like the shadow persona of my dad, because it's like my mom was the dominant one. She was like wore the trousers at home. She did the kitchen. She did the accounts. She did like predominant parenting. You know, my dad did the job. It was that classic old style. And hey, to a point, did it work? Did it not? Whatever. It's like, it's all about interpretation or misinterpretation. It worked to a point. But I learned that. So I had taken on this passive, you know, it is Matilda's space. It's like subconsciously. It wasn't conscious. But in that moment, it's like from nowhere, like this wave of anger came up, and it was like, hey, baby, I don't want you to speak like that. This is not your space. This is our space. Yes. That really hurts me when you actually say, you know, get out of my space. It's like, this is our kitchen. I love you. I love every single thing. Like you're amazing what you bring this family. This is not like conscious. I appreciate her all the time, and it's a daily practice. And she was like, she actually got turned on by it. She was like, wow. It was like this, all of a sudden I arrived. All of a sudden I was owning my right to occupy that space. And it was so revealing, just what you said there, it actually really triggers. Like, if you stepped into my space a few years ago, it's all fucking like dragons and unicorns and fucking soft, like pastel colors. It was all feminine. I've been slowly but surely, your comment really triggers a bit more. I need to crank it up. But I was like so passive in my own home. It was all the signature of feminine energy. So I just really wanted to bring my personal journey with that, with my queen. That's like one key example. It just really, I'm even just speaking, you can hear it in my voice. I'm feeling like the charge off that, but so fucking meaningful. And this conversation, I'm actually going, man, the end of this conversation, I have a lot of reflections coming through. It's like, where the fuck? Like I've had inspirations to go, I want to get like, I love Michael Jordan, and a year ago, these beautiful, you know, pictures of Michael Jordan, or different, like Hicks and Gracie is another one from BJJ, like with quotes. Yeah. I had this thing, I saw it on Etsy, it's like, oh, fuck, look at that with the quote, great intentions. I never acted on it. As you say that, I'm like, dude, Mark, you got to get that fucking shit, order it, and put it up in the wall, because why? That's your masculine signature. It's so important. It's such a beautiful point you're making.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing your story. I think it's a big piece of sharing that home. And as a leader, we can put ourselves in position so that everybody's included and everybody's expressed. And it's nothing again. It's not to say that there aren't great female leaders, but I'd say it's like a 9-9 to 1. Like I'm talking about like great leaders, not like okay leaders, but great leaders. I'd say like 90% of them are men. And of those men, of the women that are, it's probably a lot of time working in the masculine energy, which is that really where women want to be? And is that really, like in your wife's case, where she's happiest? Even if she believes that she wants it. And I think that's important to like with your story. We've got to look at the woman's actions more than what they say. When there's a discrepancy between what they're saying and what their actions are, we need to follow up with the actions rather than what they say. Because it can be a trap.
Take me deeper. Where's the trap? Mm.
So let's say my wife, I ask her, what is it that you, where is it that you want to go for dinner? And she says, oh, geez, I don't know. Like, how about we go here? And we go. Well, now what I've just done is I've surrendered leadership to her. I've told her, I don't understand you enough to know where you want to go. Could you please create the plan for us? And I'll just be a role character in that story, in your story. It's a very subtle shift. But if I just, on the contrary, I say, hey, I want to take us out to this Mexican restaurant. And I know my wife likes Mexican restaurant, or maybe I just want Mexican restaurant, but I'm making a decision. It's under the understanding of what her desires are and the understanding of who she is. She's told me the information because I understand who Megan is, of what she'll enjoy. But I'm the one making the decision, and she's coming on an adventure with me rather than the other way around, rather than her having to take the lead.
Yeah, it's taking that pressure off. I share what you're saying with the leadership. It's this idea. I feel like, looking back socially, I'm curious to know your thoughts on it, but like I look back culturally and go, okay, there was a feminist movement, which was amazing. Because why? Okay, there was a backlog, you know, years, centuries, millennia of the feminine principle, and females like were not being honored. So it's like the feminist movement came, and this like tsunami, this volcano of feminine energy came out and was being embodied by the women that were following that movement and inspired by it. And yet there was a hardness, because I've got the kickback from certain women. It's like one example was my sister. You know, when I said it was an asterisk thing, hey, it's like my queen, like this is by conscious design. She does the cooking. She likes that. That's not some old style characteristic, oh, woman in the kitchen, because that's like, fuck, that she does that. I do the ironing. My queen fucking hates ironing clothes. I love it. It's masculine. I just put on a podcast. I'll be there content. I'll do like an hour and a half of ironing. I'm in bliss. For my queen, that's like pulling your fucking teeth out. But
yeah,
an example of sort of like this unquestioned, unchecked, and I'm going to say loosely like feminist, I'd say unchecked feminist energy is like unquestioned, is like this sort of kickback, rebel against men for the sake of rebelling against men. Like my sister came into her home and passing visit, chatting, like, it's not that she'd been around us much at all. So it's like, she didn't know the dynamics that worked. And hey, you know, myself and Matilda were getting on really well. Like we had our ecosystem of our life working really well. And my queen at one point just said to me in passing, she's like, oh, babe, just, you know, your five-side soccer gear bag, where is it? I need to put it in the wash. And without any question, my sister just went in this like outburst of, oh, Matilda, don't be putting that. Like, that's just like, why is Mark not washing his own stuff? And that's not how women should be and blah, blah, blah. Like, I was like, whoa, you know, and like forgetting about, you know, my sister's story, but that's an example of, and I've seen that like in hundreds of scenarios where what myself and Matilda have going, you know, certain women just hear, oh, Matilda does more of the cooking, or Matilda, you know, Mark's doing I'm doing a bit more predominantly the career thing now.
Yes.
And when they hear that, they go, they get irate. Oh, but Matilda, what about you? It's like, back the fuck off. It's like,
yeah, it's our own.
Matilda had a few years where she was doing the predominant thing, you know, when Anya was born first, man, I was fucking the stay-at-home dad. So there's this backlash of this feminized thing of like women are against the wall. Now, what I'd say I've found is it makes sense. And I feel this is like the importance. And I love like what you're saying is like men, fucking invite men into taking ownership at home, because there's a backlash there and there's a hurt purely because I feel like there's all of these women out there that's like, we're in our power. And there's a lot of sort of feeling of we can fucking do it with or without men, actually preferably without. There's even like we'll have kids without because we don't need men. I just really think that's like a trauma induced thing because they've yet to have a generation of men step to fuck up that are trustworthy as leaders, which it's like this perfect jigsaw. It's the yin and yang that just comes together going, yeah, we came into our power, but we're prickly until we get men that we, our nervous systems can go, I don't know fucking why it is, but with this man, I just feel seen. I feel heard. I feel safe. I can relax into him taking the lead to, you know, book the Mexican restaurant, taking the lead to like family finances, et cetera, et cetera. I'm curious, Thomas, just riding off this wave, we're really going on the wave of inspiration here. What's life for you in the next wave of this conversation?
I guess rephrase your question.
Yeah. What spontaneously come up as I've shared my observations? Yes. I'm just curious, like what you're observing, what's life for you?
Yeah. I had actually one of my own story from our families just a few years ago. We needed to get a new vehicle. And it was my wife's vehicle. I've had the same little small pickup truck for a long time. And we had Maddie and we were looking at having another child. And so at the time it was COVID and there was a bunch of, there were a lot of rental cars that were going for sale because nobody was traveling. And I found a beat on a really good, a great deal on a minivan. I was like, this is the vehicle that we need for our family for the next phase. And this was going to be Megan's car. And I researched it. I test drove it. She's like, I trust you. You know, if it's good, get it. And she had a family member who found out about that, that I was the one that selected, researched, and purchased her car. And she wasn't the one doing it. And she's like, that's controlling. That's manipulative. Well, as it turns out, Megan loves the car. It's been great for our family. It gets us everywhere and all our stuff that we need to all the events. And so I think there are few men. If you're a man that's listening to this and you're already this deep into the episode, you're a dad who is committed to the craft of fatherhood. And you're a husband who's committed to the craft of being a father. And you are one of very few men, and you will be faced with tremendous opposition and jealousy from certain women who are not able to attract the level of man who you are. And they reject it with anger. They can reject it with frustration and shaming. And I would just say to you, do what works for your family and the hell with what a family member or friend who isn't operating within your family thinks if it works for you.
I love that. It's like, if there's almost this thing, if you're not leading, dare I say, you're not leading if you're not getting kickback from mainstream society, because there's so much fucking, you know, we talk about the shows about the indoctrination to mediocrity for the modern man, the Homer Simpsons, all of these, you know, all of these shows that just like, well, that's the level that men are at. It's imbecile and anything beyond that, like, don't rise too high. So if you're not getting kickback, you're not leading.
Yes. I got a, just tying this up, I put a post out there that I took my wife out on a date and took her on a hike. And I said in the post, don't ask her what she wants. Just make a decision and surprise her. And I had, there were a few people who, well, although there was a lot of like women who are like, and men, they're like, yes, absolutely, celebrating, 90% really positive. But that 10% that didn't like that, like, were very like, that's not right. That's objectifying. That's not the right way to treat a woman. And it's absolutely true that if you're not making somebody upset, you're just living to play it safe. And you're living to make people happy that you don't even see on a regular basis.
I'm just at a fuck yes to that. I'm like, there's actually parts of my family of origin journey that I consciously need to hold back, but I can sort of in a roundabout way say I'm at such a fuck yes to that from both sides of the family, of not letting generations before, not letting family of origin, not letting society impede what you know to be right. And I know what you're saying, like, Thomas, what I hear, and like what I hear guys, like there's guys in heroic husbands, men's circles, in both their role as husbands, you know, in deep intimate relationship with their queens and in parenting, like almost without fail, every single time one of the guys checks in, and he checks in with, I took leadership on this. Their queens are going, that's the moment when they tear up. That's the moment when they are like leaning into the marriage like they haven't done in 10 years. That's the moment when they just go, you know, they sleep easy that night. That's the moment. It's just, they're the moments every single time. These powerful, amazing men with fucking a backlog of human doubts and fears and conditioning and, you know, it's like, et cetera, et cetera. But when they step into that arena and they overcome that conditioning and they take that action and they lead and they make that decision and they like book that restaurant or just do whatever it is that is leadership in parenting and in relationship, their queen's nervous system is letting them know that was fucking awesome and more, please. Almost without fail. It's indicative. I'm seeing it omnipresent. I've seen it in my own marriage. Thomas, we're coming into landing here. My enthusiasm levels is like, I just want to fucking keep, I want to keep going. I feel like we're getting thicker and thicker into it. Coming into landing, is there any last wisdom bombs? Boy, you've really packed them in, but is there any last core message that you'd love to speak to guys, as you said, guys that are listening in this land? And the guys listening in are fucking awesome. Like the statistics of guys listening for the entire, there's awesome, awesome fucking men. I really just want to speak that to guys listening in. It's like, fuck the conditioning. And I know Thomas is like speaking, this is part of Thomas's core message, but like, fuck the conditioning. You are the most important leaders on the planet.
Yes.
Your dads, your husbands, the next seven generations depends on you. Thomas, with that level of intentionality that guys are listening in, really listening into, what's one last core message you just really would love guys listening in to go home with, like at coming into landing in this beautiful conversation we're having?
Number one is make an intentional decision about the story that you want to write. And a lot of us don't spend time because we get caught in the day-to-day looking ahead and what's the childhood that I want my kids to have? What are the threats? What's the story that I want to write for my 30s, my 40s, my 50s, whatever you're in? And how do I make that happen? You're the main character in your own story. You know, Indiana Jones, doesn't matter which adventure he's on, he's still making shit happen. And you can be that same character that the men who figure out how to make it happen, it doesn't matter their environment. Doesn't matter the storm, it's the captain of the ship. And I have a opportunity for folks who are staying to the end of a free leadership quiz at dadswholead.com. It's my gift to you. You go through about 15 questions and it'll tell you what your archetype is for leadership. What's your natural style of leading? And you get a breakdown in your email of how to leverage your leadership style, what your strengths are, what's some common gaps are. And that's a great way to get that 1% better that I like to offer to the men's space.
Thomas, I really appreciate you serving the guys. The value throughout the whole entire conversation that we've had, and I've done that questionnaire. It's epic. It's amazing. Just the clarity that it brought me. So I do advise guys to follow up with that, and that link will be in the podcast description. Thomas, it's like, it goes without saying, I'm like deeply impressed, and I know every single guy listening in, your story, you know, from early parenthood to meeting that resistance to, you know, intergenerational trauma, but that you found the inspiration to connect with that masculine fire, that potentiality. And man, you're an unstoppable fucking father figure and a leader, and just deep admiration. I know guys will have gained immense value from everything that you have said, but most importantly, what you're embodying, continue to embody. So I really hope guys will reach out to you there at Dads Who Lead. Thank you so much for coming on, man.
Absolutely, brother. Thanks for having me.
Guys, that was another in a long list of epic, epic men that we have invited on here. Really do like... inspiration is beautiful, listening in is beautiful, but it's in the integration. Find key things, and there was wisdom bombs there. Whatever is the one or two key things that you're like, you're locking in, that Thomas spoke into the space, lock in them, find creative ways to integrate it. Follow up with his Dads Who Lead, do the questionnaire, take one or two key actions, lock them into your mind, take the actions. It's in the integration that the transformation really happens. Another beautiful conversation, definitely perfectly in alignment with the mantra of our movement here. Better husbands today, better world tomorrow. Go have an amazingly beautiful kingly day. Heads up, kings. Don't miss the only opportunity left to join Heroic Husbands Men's Circles in 2023. Go from feeling that your best will never be good enough to becoming the marriage transforming hero of your relationship. Applications for the last intake of new members in 2023 are open until October 20th. Apply to join by clicking the link in the podcast episode description. There are limited spaces available, so don't miss out by applying to join now.